betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. All right, we got a good one here recapping a wild night in the NBA with the NBA draft. A lot of guys moved around way off board. Mock drafts kind of out the window pretty early on. Nets come away with a huge haul. Cameron Thomas, De'Ron Sharp, among others. Adam was absolutely crushing it all over the place on the network last night. We're going to get into the whole thing here. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brooklyn, yo.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the five-pick Brooklyn Nets every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator, DFSR.com. If you need a projection for FanDuel or DraftKings, go to DFSR.com. But the real story of the draft, one Mr. Adam Armbrecht, television debut, absolutely crushing it for the network, draft expert, multiple spots. This guy was killing it. He's also the host of the One Giant Podcast, but you don't care about that. Buddy, what's it like to be a superstar when it comes to NBA draft analysis?
It's the pageantry of it all, Doug. I was swept away by it. It was a ton of fun. The coverage that the network did, honestly, I mean, John Corrales, who we've had on this show before, I mean, people know Chad Ford, NBA insider. You got Rafael Barlow. It was really awesome. It was awesome to be a part of something that had so much production go into it. And I'm just glad that I hit my mark. You know what I mean? When Johnny K throws to you as an expert on these draft picks, you just got to be ready to go. And I feel like, listen, I'm not here to self-aggrandize, but I thought I did pretty good. Pretty proud of myself.
Oh, dude, I was cheering you on from the text message. You know me. The Locked On NBA draft did a great job. We're going to break down the Nets draft here. Obviously, ton to talk about. But like I said, they put on a studio show. We've been talking about it for weeks leading up. It was live on YouTube and a couple other spots. It was just a totally professional gig. And yeah, really, really cool to see it kind of break down for the network. Cool to see Adam up there waxing on Cameron Thomas, who's kind of a surprise thing, and on an absolutely bananas bonkers night for the NBA. Mock drafts out the window. Don't even know why you read mock drafts at this point, because teams don't. I'll tell you who doesn't read mock drafts: NBA teams. Because this thing, after the first, like, you know, four picks, which were pretty chalk, this thing completely changed. So there's a ton to talk about. We're not going to be able to get into everything that went down here on Thursday. It's simply too much. There's other team implications. There was even Nets stuff that we're not going to be able to get to. So I'm just going to give everyone a fair warning here that's just so much to happen here, and we'll break down as much as we can here on Friday, and then we will obviously get into stuff for next week too, and with all these draft picks. So I mean, where do you want to start here? I guess we start with the Shamit thing, right? Because that's kind of what kicked off the evening.
Yeah, that's the precursor to all of it. And I mean, and then oddly enough, it maybe thought that it was going to play a factor at some point in the night. It doesn't necessarily quite get crystallized as to what that move is a precursor for. But Shamit gets moved to the Phoenix Suns. He has ties to Monty Williams going back to the Philadelphia 76ers when Williams was an assistant there. So Williams familiar with Shamit, liked him. They move him. The Nets get the 29th overall pick in the draft in return. And I thought that this was going to be, a lot of people did. Like, we were getting messages from some of the fans, right, you know, DMs over on Twitter saying, okay, now you have two picks. Like, where are they moving up to? That seemed to be the consensus. The Nets were going to move up the board to get something done as far as a specific target. And then it just slowly keeps moving its way through the first round. And the Nets end up holding on to not only those two picks, but also the three in the second round. Do you think that, given obviously the Nets situation, going for championships last year, you're in the draft, you say, okay, let's take a flyer, let's bring in a guy like Shamit, did the year in Brooklyn basically give Sean Marks and the Nets a sample size that said, hey, it's not even about this guy's skill set, but it is about how it fits on our team and whether or not we're going to be able to maximize his value on this roster, and you just didn't see it over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think it's a couple different things here. I think they probably saw that the fit wasn't like exactly what they needed it to be. I think that was part of it. I actually think, so I texted you during this, you know, we're kind of speculating on what was going to happen. I kind of thought that the Nets were going to keep the picks and just use it as a stockpile, roster stockpiling on the cheap, right? Because we know they're going to need to fill out the rest of the roster. The best way to do it cheaply is just to do it through the draft because you can get all rookie contracts. And so I was kind of, this wasn't sourced at all, but my gut was that they were just not going to move up here, short of like a Dinwiddie deal or something like that, that they were able to package stuff together and like, you know, really move up. But once it got to like 10, I didn't really think that was going to happen. So I kind of thought this was a stockpile move. And I think the Shamit thing was, I mean, they get back Carter, who's definitely more of a lead ball handler. They're probably a little bit of a logjam in terms of where, you know, all that goes. We'll spend offseason stuff thinking about that. But in terms of Shamit, I just thought it was, they saw the draft is deep. They, I think, had someone fall to them that they did not expect in Cameron Thomas. And I think that was kind of lucky. And I think that they thought, I know my guess was, and I think that they looked at the range where they were picking. And I hate to compare this to myself with like fantasy stuff, but sometimes if you do dynasty drafts, especially like long-term ones, you'll look and say, hey, I'm picking in this range. There's just like seven guys that I can envision myself picking in this range. So at that point, I kind of wouldn't mind giving up something to get something back in that. You know what I mean? Like take back a pick because I know there's like six guys or seven guys that I'm going to feel really comfortable drafting in that spot. And at that point, you just kind of roll the dice and take the pick. And that's why you don't package it together and move up, if that makes sense.
Well, and that's the difference. Yeah, no, and it does, because that's the difference of, and everyone was saying this about last year's draft class versus this year's, right? Last year was, boy, there's you know, it's a thin class. So when you get up in the later portion of the first round and you see a chance to move a pick to get someone who has been in the NBA and you have a commodity there, it's Shamit. They do things to also get Bruce Brown last year. Like, that makes sense last year. This year, instead, it's a deep class. So you're probably right. You sit there and you say, if I have two picks in the late 20s, but I can tell you seven guys, eight guys that I'd be happy to have, two out of any of those players, you feel like it's a win. And, you know, specifically, if we turn our attention to Cam Thomas, I mean, surprised by it? 100%. But once you start to look at this guy, and I said it, you know, when John threw it to me last night, it was, all right, you want an absolute offensive weapon to throw into that mix there. That's what Cam Thomas was, and maybe that made it very easy for the Nets to stand pat and to get just to look at this draft and say, talented guys, that's what we're going to take, and we're going to need to clear some room here, or at least shuffle the board in terms of who else exists on this roster. And Carter is a different type of player, a far different type of player than Shamit is. So now you're shifting the dynamics of how this roster is comprised, and I think it's for the better. I think it's trying to create more balance inside of this roster, and specifically inside the guards as well.
Yeah, I think that my guess is the Thomas thing, they did not, they, you know, if you read the notes afterwards, that they only had some very brief interviews with him. I think it was some cursory stuff. Maybe they thought he was going to start falling down the draft. He clearly was like the last guy in the green room. The expectation was that he was going to get drafted higher. Again, like I said at the beginning, mock drafts got thrown right out the window when this thing started, or basically right around pick five or six was when they started kind of the decision branch just started to kind of worm out into different ways that not many people saw coming. So Thomas was still in the room. But I think, and my guess is that they had their sights set on a certain set of guys, and that at some point Thomas was still just sitting there. They knew you can never really have enough shooting, especially with a team like the Nets. We'll get into him in a second. But in terms of just like sort of sometimes you just say, hey, we're picking here at 27. This is the best player available. So with Cam Thomas, you got on the network, kind of broke it down what you thought about the pick. Cameron Thomas, sorry, I'm kind of abbreviating it here, but what were your thoughts when he got called? Because not a guy we discussed in any pre-draft stuff, Not a guy we broke down really any specific tape on for the Nets going in, simply because we just didn't think he would fall this far. That's why we never, that wasn't part of the group of guys. Got one of them, Darren Sharp. We'll talk about right. him in a minute. But what were your thoughts here? Cameron Thomas falls. You kind of have to do some catch up on where he lands with the Nets. I think we've had some time to sit with it now. What are your thoughts here on this pick?
Yeah, I mean, listen, like you say, it's not someone that I think you anticipate being there. The idea of throwing out mock drafts just became even more official when Cam Thomas is there for that, or Cameron Thomas. Three-level scorer, so you like that. It's surprising to me that you went with basically a pure scorer as opposed to one of these other complementary pieces. But as you say, can you ever have too much firepower? So, three-level scorer, great at getting a shot, can create his own open look, is good off the ball in terms of slashing, finding the open lanes, getting towards the basket. So, if you get him on the court alongside of Harden, alongside of Kyrie, I mean, any of these guys, alongside Durant, he's going to be a nice player off ball as much as he is on. He's great with his handle. He has good court vision, plays with his head up. Average, by the way, over 7 free throw attempts per game and knocks down 88% of his shots. So he's good at attacking the basket, good at taking contact and still trying to finish through it. It's great. The offensive game on this kid is absolutely phenomenal. You're not going to get anything necessarily on the defensive end out of the gate from him. He's only 6'3", so the size isn't going to be a real impact there. But for me, when you look at the guard room right now, and you think about the idea that, last year it was Mike James, it was Tyler Johnson, this is the other part of upgrading this position and saying, how do we get better here? How do we, you didn't have Spencer Dinwiddie from injury, and by all accounts, he'll probably be gone. When you think about now bringing in Cameron Thomas, the difference of the second unit for the Nets and some of that crossover is going to look vastly different now when you have an elite NBA-ready playmaker at that position. And that's what Cam Thomas is. So now when you get Harden off the court, when you get Irving off the court, there's not going to be this disconnect of offensive scoring, of tempo, of pace. He's going to be able to do that for you. So I like the talent. I like the pick on its own. I'm surprised in terms of where I thought the Nets might go. But now that he's here, as John Corrales said it to me last night, he was like, now listen, so maybe you're just going to beat teams 160 to 145. The Nets leaned into firepower, and I think it makes a lot of sense for the way that the Nets are built.
Yeah, if you look at the way the first part of this draft works out, you have to look at the Nets and say, man, their second unit is so much improved now, right? Between Javon Carter yes. and Cameron Thomas. It's not like we didn't spend a ton of time last season talking about the second unit because you don't need to when you have three guys that are this good, when it's just pretty, for the most part, once things got rolling, it was pretty easy to beat teams. But one, having a great set, the difference of bringing Mike James, Chris Chioza, by the way, I loved watching these guys, so it's nothing about that. It's just that you mentioned like a different caliber of player coming in off the bench. Those guys are pretty small. It's lightning fast, but they're not going to create a ton of their own shots. They're going to need other guys on the court with them to facilitate any kind of scoring. And as much as Mike James loved the step back three at times, that's just like not totally in his bag. And so the part where you look at this Nets second unit now and you say, okay, we have a very reliable ball handler. He's not going to play playoff minutes, Javon Carter, but can he play a ton for you in the regular season and really, eat up a lot of minutes in a really good veteran way? 100%. You get Cam, then the thing the Nets haven't had in a while too, I think they thought Shamit was going to be this, but he wasn't, was this maybe a little bit of like a microwave scorer off the bench where you could, give these guys a rest, know that someone could get their own shot, know that someone could kind of create and wouldn't matter too much who that was on the rest of the court with them. And I think that's definitely what they got here in Cameron Thomas. And you have to feel really, really good about that, right? Because we spend so much time talking about the big three, rightfully so, we always should. But the way you can lighten some of the load on what they do is to have other guys who can create their own shots. And the Nets really just didn't have that last season. Tyler Johnson really couldn't do it all that effectively. Just mentioned the other guards. Shamit, like I said, they thought it was probably going to happen. It just simply didn't. And now you have to look at this bench and say, hey, can Thomas improve in the defensive end? Now we really have something? Yeah, that you can definitely look at that. But in the meantime, what are we definitely going to get out of him? We're definitely going to get a guy we can bring in 10 to 15 minutes, probably right away, and get some buckets and feel pretty good about it. And you mentioned like the almost 90% free throw shooting. That's a really, really good sign for his like long-term effectiveness in the league in terms of scoring. So yeah, you have to feel really good. In one day, the increased depth, especially in the offensive end for the Nets.
Yeah, and just to drive home the point, average 23 points per game as a freshman. That's fourth in the NCAA. Just to be in terms of what this guy is from a pure scoring perspective. So no, you do, and the two things came to mind as well. And I think we've kind of alluded to this leading up to it, but you said it in some of our pre-draft stuff. At a certain point, when you get later in the first round, it's about you go into best available, right? So when Thomas is there, the Nets look at it, and yes, you're going for fit because there are other guys there around that selection that they didn't go for, right? We talked about Jaden Springer. The Nets didn't take Jaden Springer. He went to the 76ers at 28. So there's clearly different versions of guards that you can go after, but when you're in best available mode, it's for how it fits your team, and that's where I think it's easy to pull the trigger on a player like Thomas. The other thing is maybe just this global perspective of the Shamit move, at, Spencer Dinwiddie, the injury, these moving parts. I think that when you're on in a win now mode, as the Brooklyn Nets are, it is very much a year-to-year experiment in terms of the pieces that surround the big three. So yeah, you have Harden, KD, and Kyrie. Now it's about how do these pieces fit alongside of them. Shamit, we think it could work. 1 year sample size, okay, that's not going to be the answer. Other guys, you mentioned Tyler Johnson and Mike James. Listen, that's a product of necessity in some ways. But a Bruce Brown, him coming over, if whatever the Nets thought he was going to be, he showed so much more versatility for this roster that also impacts then. Okay, now what do we think at the guard position? Who else do we want to have in that room? So I think unlike other teams, developmental teams, building teams, where they say, let's see what happens next, even with a Landry Shamit, now you get to look at it, and say, that sample size, was it good enough? If it's not good enough, we need to turn the page. And one last note I will say on Shamit as well, remember, he's extension eligible. So that's the other factor that I think was talked about with the Nets and saying, here's a guy, whatever he is or isn't, if it fit or didn't fit, we get through this year. This is about getting value for a player that we don't see ourselves keeping long-term in our future. So now we've gone ahead and at least dialed it back and given ourselves another runway to assess a young talent and see if he fits into Brooklyn Nets big picture.
Yeah, because at some point, like we said, the money becomes tangible. It's just you can't spend for infinity. We know the Nets are already going to spend a ton. And if you can... Yeah, like sort of get a little. And look, Carter has money on the books coming too. It's like not too dissimilar to what Shamit, but has 2 years out. So you're buying like an extra year of a set cost rather than trying to figure out what the deal is with Shamit at the end of this year. So there's like a slight difference in how their stuff is structured. It's very similar for this year, and then next year, you would think that Shamit's going to get something of a raise over what Carter's going to get or getting right now, which is like right in that $4 million range. So yeah, being able to do that, I think makes a lot of sense. I'm really excited. Just to go back to Cameron Thomas here for a second, I'm very excited to see sort of like what he's able to do in terms of the offensive structure in Brooklyn. Like if he's able to play a decent amount on ball, that's going to be a great thing to watch. You know, we've said, we spent the season where none of the guys on the team could stay healthy for a whole season. Right? Like we know this to be true. Like we already know that injuries, we can't just project out for the Nets that they are going to come into the next. I think we can project out that they're going to come into the season healthy. We cannot project out that they were going to stay that way the whole season. No one has given that any kind of track record where that's a possibility at this point. So you just have to project out a number of missed games. You have to project out like maybe even extended absences for some of these guys because some of them have had it nearly every single season. Kyrie, like that, Harden, has been pretty healthy for his whole career. But then last season we saw him get banged up a few different times. And KD also had an extended absence. So you just have to... At this point with the Nets, you have to be projecting out multiple missed games among their scorers, and that's where drafting a scorer makes so much sense, right? Like because if you look at if you look at them as a healthy group, you're like, why do you need Cameron Thomas, right? You're like, Corrales is like, well, right. Are they going to win every game 160? He's not wrong. He's not wrong on day one of the season. Day one of the season, Cameron Thomas looks like an embarrassment of riches when it comes to scoring. Now, day 57 or game 57 or something like that, when we're in the dregs of the season and people are banged up, we did start to notice the difference of not having those guys, right? Like, that was the guy that we didn't, that we, it, you kind of felt an effect of not having him. And I think that that's more of what we're looking at here too, is like, not day one, day 100, day 125, something like that is where these guys are going to start to really kind of pay dividends.
Yeah, and nothing more evident than, again, go to the playoff run, right? And like you say, I think it crystallizes something, healthy or not, when you say, well, it's Harden, it's KD, it's Kyrie. Now, take away two of them, essentially, with the injury that Harden tried to play through, and you go, where is the scoring coming from? That's Thomas, right? And a different type of scorer than a Joe Harris, obviously, right? Spot-up shooter versus a self-creator. So that, you know, arguably, you could say this is going to be the fourth off coming off the bench, maybe the fourth most important offensive weapon, fifth behind Joe Harris in terms of the hierarchy, but the ability to get that shot created for himself. The other thing I just wanted to quickly ask you about him is, I think that if he can play on ball, as you mentioned, now the dynamic of Kyrie was willing to take a back seat to Harden and let him run the point and play off ball. If Thomas can also provide that same type of rhythm, now you're talking about lightening the load further on Kyrie Irving and letting there be this very much ebb and flow as these guys come in. Same thing with Carter. These are now guys that can play on ball. This is ball handling is what the Nets didn't have as complements to Harden and to Kyrie Irving. Now, both the players they got via trade and through the draft represent guys you can put the ball in their hand and do different things with it. But that, to me, is something that the Nets learned over this season and knew they had to shift and bring in a couple of different elements to be able to have, again, the same balance and continuity from one unit to the next.
It's hard for me to imagine Kyrie deferring to Cameron Thomas as a ball handler, but I get the general gestalt of the idea. I mean, to be fair, Thomas wasn't much of a passer. That's, to me, okay at the college level, depending on who your teammates are, depending on the structure of your system. Assists, you like to see. I mean, he barely had any. He played 34 minutes a game. He had 1.5 assists a game. So this was not part of something that he was trying to do. But I think some of those numbers get a little skewed based on just some other contextual factors that sometimes are hard to see just from the box score. So I'm not going to look totally into it. At the same time, I can't imagine Kyrie Irving extending the same, you're the point guard, I'm the shooting guard, when it comes to all players that come in on the offense, because I don't think that's going to be the case. All right, we're going to get more into the Nets draft here from Thursday. First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar. You know the family goes running for the door when they know the Built Bar delivery is on the way. Extended family, too, because they've picked up my mail before, and some of these things have just disappeared as they entered the other people's cabinets. Built Bar, the very best protein bar on the market. It starts with the flavors, cherry, barcia, raspberry, mint, brownie, strawberry, cookies and cream, German chocolate. That's just a little sampling of what you get at Built Bar, and you're not even going to believe after hearing those flavors that these things are actually good for you, actually healthy protein bars, best tasting on the market. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, ranging from 130 to 180, 4 to 5 grams of sugar, only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, amazing flavors, all tasty, all super healthy. You can even get the grasshopper cookie if you're into the Thin Mint. That's the grasshopper cookie is going to be your jam. Built Bar, the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. Go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON to get 15% off your order. Promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at Built.com. All right, and finally, and I say finally because we're just going to go through the first two picks here, the first round picks. We're going to get more into the second round guys next week as lower level draft picks, something to contribute for sure, some exciting stuff to kind of dream on with some of those guys. But we'll probably hold off until next week until we talk about the rest of the Nets draft. But at 29, the pick they got from Houston, the pick they got from Phoenix in the Shamet trade, they do take De'Aaron Sharpe, a guy that we did do some pre-draft sort of analysis on because he had been really heavily linked to the Nets basically from the jump. It was not a secret that the Nets loved this guy. It was kind of like, oh, when they didn't take him at 27, you kind of just, if they didn't take him at 29, I think you'd have been like, okay, none of this stuff makes, no one knows anything before the draft because this was like, everyone felt this was a total lock for them when they only had the one pick at 27. Not a total lock, but he was definitely the name that came up the most with the Nets. What'd you think about the Sharp pick here?
Yeah, so I'll take it just in two phases. Initially, and then where it ends up following NBA workouts, and then you saw Chad Ford talking about this a lot on the Locked On coverage last night. The initial take on him when we talked about him was obviously a big boy. He was 265, so he's thick. He's going to give you some muscle and strength on the defensive end. Good rebounder on both ends of the floor, even more so on the offensive end. Very, very nice job of anticipating offensive rebounds, putback opportunities, etc. The positives, at least on the surface, were as a passing big man, he showed the ability to and the right instincts around that piece. So if I wanted to go in the positive for where he was going to fit with the Nets, I would say, oh, what a nice compliment to Nicholas Claxton, a guy that can be there on the offensive end and be a part of the pick and roll facilitation. You know, an area of Claxton's game, obviously, where he struggled a little bit. The wrinkle that got thrown into this is that leading up to the draft in NBA workouts, De'Ron Sharpe had slimmed down a little bit. And he was showing off something that existed but wasn't utilized a ton in college. He was showing off some of his mid-range shot, and it was looking good. That completely changes the dynamic of what you think this player is because, not to go on here, when we thought about this basically being a replacement for DeAndre Jordan, right? I mean, that's how, if you want to look at it that way. My initial thought was, yeah, I know, but think about the things DeAndre Jordan doesn't do and how that hurts a team, any team, especially the Nets. Add in a shot. If De'Ron Sharpe has a respectable jumper, respectable elbow look at the NBA level, now all of a sudden he's a far more complete player immediately walking in the door, and his impact is, this ends up being a very nice complementary piece, again, to add to Nicholas Claxton, to play alongside Kevin Durant. Bringing down the weight also means he can run the floor a little bit better because the transition game was going to be interesting when you're 265, bigger guy. You know, defensively, the footwork, getting on the perimeter, that'll be a wait and see. But this piece makes a lot of sense if you now look at the totality of what his game can be, hopefully in the immediate when he comes in the NBA.
Yeah, completely. Like, so I had the same reaction when Chad Ford was talking about the differences in his workout compared to his game in UNC. And we did, I will say, to our credit, we did talk about this a little bit on when we were breaking down Sharpe, because like his default mode was getting to the post. It kind of made sense considering his girth and his size that that's how UNC would want to play him. But we kind of wondered if that was more of a scheme thing or if that was just his total default mode, right? Like, right. It was like because the post
thing is the hard part about college guys, right, Thomas, too. How are they being utilized versus what they're capable of? Sorry.
Exactly. No, it's okay. So you're right. It's one of these things like, okay, man, he's defaulting to the post every time. That's not what he's going to do in the NBA level. It's hard to imagine what that's going to, how this exactly translates. And also, if you look at some of this, the other numbers, like the free throw percentage is pretty low. He took 3.5 free throws a game. He shot 50%. That's bad. I don't really know another way to put it. That's a bad free throw percentage. And that is not something that screams out to you has range in his game, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're having trouble at the free throw, if you're having trouble, it's not always. Look, you can have, because you can have a slightly lower free throw percentage than what shows off like your overall shooting percentage just because it's just a little bit different thing. Like, there can be more of a mental aspect to that game. It's not in rhythm. Like, there are other little factors that can kind of factor in here. In general, guys who shoot 50% from the line aren't also knockdown three-point shooters, right? So it's just like, I will say, I think you can make that one-to-one. But if this pre-draft workout stuff is correct, and Sean Marks really, he reiterated some of this in his post-draft interview where he was talking, he was just going through all the different picks and his excitement level, and he was clearly pretty pumped about what had happened for them.
Yep.
And he talked about Sharpe in kind of the same way, because he talked about his mobility, his ability to, he used the word ability to stretch the floor. Like, that is not something at all you would have looked, you could have said after watching his tape at UNC. Like,
right.
No one would have called him a guy that could stretch the floor. And then Marks followed up with that, said, which, to be frank, really hasn't been seen yet. So he admitted that, like, this hasn't, like, this was not how he was used in college at all, right? So but something happened in the workouts where either he said, hey, they just never wanted me to do this at UNC, and so, but here's what it looks like, or he just went and really worked on it because he knew that was going to be important for his game as an NBA player, a viable big. Either way, hearing that does make you at least be able to kind of picture a different mold than what we saw on the tape, because the guy we saw at UNC did not seem like the guy, or at least to me at all. Like, I was like, no thanks. But knowing this part about it, it actually starts to crystallize why his name was much higher on draft boards than I thought it should have been.
Yeah, and it's the difference of if he's going to have that ability in the range of his shooting, now all of a sudden the spacing, as you say, a floor spacer, but you know, just think about how it pulls defenses out, right? Think about how it opens up the lanes in behind them for whether it's Harden or Kyrie driving, whether it's Kevin Durant. You know, so much of what the Nets face when you don't have a legitimate offensive threat playing out of the five is the congestion in the lane, right? A little bit of that elastic zone look where you're always going to have multiple bodies looking to slash and hack at any of these guys going to the rim. Now, if you can pull them out, if you can create some of that separation in space, it's going to open things up differently. So, you know, both of these picks, and especially in De'Ron Sharpe, the idea, again, of creating more of a balance for the five on the floor. It's something that last year, in the first year of these big three, you could just tell. It's hard to do it all in one shot, right? It's hard to build the perfect roster all in one swing, especially when you acquire someone like Harden on the fly during the season and trade away other pieces that you thought were going to be a part of it, like a Jared Allen, right? Like there's a version of this roster looking different even just last year. So now you get to take that step back and examine some guys. If Sharpe can do it, if Sharp can just do some of that shot making, then all of a sudden it opens up a lot of opportunities for him on this roster in the immediate, by the way. You talk about Sean Marks being ecstatic. I think a part of that is because we said it about Thomas. You can say it about Sharp. We're going to get into the other guys. But Sharp is an immediate player now for the Nets. He's going to get minutes. This isn't Reggie Perry last year looking to develop somebody. Both of these guys are going to see minutes on the Brooklyn Nets, and that's not something that you looked at anyone last year remotely in that way. And that's a difference because now it creates a new dynamic for this team. And they're better. That's all I can say. They're better. They've improved themselves. I'm not going to over pontificate on what these guys will do. Let's see them play. Let's see them get on the court. But you have to love it. If Sean, by the way, we said this going in, if Sean Marks loves it, then I love it. That's generally my stance when it comes to the draft and trying to wrap my head around players that, as we've said, we don't watch a ton of the college game. We're more than willing to dive in on the tape and learn about these guys, which we did. But you got to like it if the organization feels like they knocked the draft out of the park.
Yeah, like there's some organizations I think at this point you can give benefit of the doubt status to. I think the Nets are one of them. We heard this a few times on just the Locked On stuff last night, especially when teams were confused, local hosts were confused about stuff. Sometimes you'd hear them say, hey, look, I don't really get it, but this guy's got more track record than I do. Now, you don't say that about every team, like, you know, the Knicks traded away a bunch of
happy
picks.
There. Yeah.
Like, I don't really know what's going on there. Yeah, no, right. And you can't necessarily do the benefit of the doubt thing with that, right? So, there's just different teams that exist in different sort of spectrums around this stuff. Overall, even non-benefit of the doubt, I think I would have probably looked at this draft and said this was a win for the Nets, right? And it just gets even more so, like you said, when Sean Marks gets excited, then I think we can feel pretty excited too. Next week, we're going to talk, we'll talk more about this draft stuff. We'll talk more about where some of these guys land, like what a guy like Sharpe does to a guy like DeAndre Jordan. I don't know. There's like lots of questions that can be asked about where some of these moves are. They also drafted Kessler Edwards, Marcus Zagorowski, and Raekwon Gray. We'll get into what some of those picks
Spencer
mean.
Spencer Dinwiddie chatter.
Round picks, and I'm sure we'll hear some Dinwiddie chatter, Bruce Brown qualifying offer. There's a lot of stuff here to get into next week. So all in all, really great draft. As I said, just kind of made all the more special and better because Adam was absolutely crushed it on the live show. That's it. We're going to rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Like and subscribe. We'll be here all off season.
What a special evening. The best fantasy is written in the language of dreams. It is alive as dreams are alive. More real than real. For a moment at least, that long magic moment before we wake. Georgie R.R.R.R.R. Martin.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. Finish that next book, my friend. Finish that next book.
Dragons.
All right, well, we'll be back again next week talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.